We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What a pass. Giddy underneath for JRE. The reverse and the rookie-to-rookie action. Outside the Dort. He'll get the flyby. Three on the way, and he rattles it in. SGA defended closely by Westbrook. Tough step back. Gets up the shot. Banks it in for the lead.
This is Udort. You're listening to the Uncontested.
What is up, and welcome to the Uncontested Podcast bonus episode coming to you live Friday morning, June 17th. We are 6 days out from the NBA draft. I'm your host for the evening, Jacob Niffen. I guess not the evening, it's the morning. I'm so used to saying that.
It's the evening somewhere, if you think about
there
it.
There you go.
That's true.
I've got my co-host Taylor and Kamiar along for the ride, and special guest joining us this morning, draft expert. You can hear his voice on Game Theory Podcast with Sam Vecenie from The Athletic. We've got Matt Penny on the show. Matt, how's it going, man?
I'm doing awesome. I just watched that hype up pump up video. I'm waiting for starting lineups now. I'm still fighting. I went to the Celtics game last night, unfortunately. So that was a good pick me up. It's like the next season already started watching the Giddy pass, the Dort jumper. Let's go. Let's play.
There you go. Unfortunate for Boston. I apologize. I was hoping we'd get a game seven, but Boston, a lot of young talent. They should be right back at it. So I'm not worried about it.
I don't like losing on the home floor. That's what was the worst for me.
That's true,
they steamrolled out to a 14-2 run, and my buddy's like, "We're good. Stop panicking." I have like a shirt over my face the whole time. Like, it's coming. Like, the train is coming. They just see it. It's like, "Oh, here's the locomotive. It's coming."
Matt, for what it's worth, I was inside the arena whenever Clay had the infamous OKC Thunder game six, where it just completely exploded in that fourth quarter. So I can relate.
I just got to stay away a little bit because I was there for elimination, see the Warriors celebrate. I was actually at the game in the Boston Garden, the last game the Celtics played when Shaquille O'Neal and Penny Hardaway knocked them out. So I should have stayed on the couch. I got a last-minute ticket. I told my buddies earlier the day I'm not going to go. I should have listened to myself. But tough to turn down game six because they pushed it to seven. We're like, yeah, we're there. And a lot of somber fans leaving the Garden last night.
Oh,
yeah.
Fun season, though. Steph just willed it. I mean, an incredible series from Steph.
Yeah, he's a tough guy to stop. Regardless of the coverage, that was like such a thing. Do you go drop it? He's going to figure it out. He did. He hit some of those dagger threes and did the night-night. And I was like, I should get a cab. This direction's not changing. But you don't want to be the guy. You don't want to be the Mark Wahlberg that leaves during the Super Bowl and they come back. I actually wasn't that, too. So that one worked out for me. I found myself into funky places with Boston sports.
There you go. Awesome. Well, Matt, we are going to dive into some NBA draft stuff. I know you are probably tired to death of answering NBA draft questions, but you know what? We're going to do it anyways.
Let's do it.
Six days out, and then we can actually talk about what happened and not what will happen. Taylor, I think you want to lead us off. You got something here?
I mean, I think this is the most important question, and we have to kick off with it, Matt. How does it feel to be displaced from captain of the Josh Minot fan club after your friend and colleague John Hollinger comes in and has him 10th on his big board? I mean, You might be a bigger fan of him than you are.
It was a spectacle because somebody, Sam tipped me off before the article came out, Sam Messini at The Athletic, and he said, hey, Hollinger's got mine up really high. I'm just letting you know. And I've had Josh in like the 30s all year, and I settled at like 38 for this draft or something. So I opened John's article and I'm scrolling. I'm like, whoa, buddy. He had him 10th. I'm like, I like him. I do not like him that much. That is too much.
I didn't do a double take. It's
like, my double takes were that and Johnny Davis 29th. I was like, all right. Well, let's play some basketball and see what this looks like in about a year from now. Cause I don't know if that's going to play out that way.
Yeah. I think Hollinger also had Şengün like 5th.
Yeah. High. Pretty
last
high.
Year.
Yeah.
Really high. Hey, something against consensus. You got to enjoy it.
Yeah, and that's kind of the cool thing. And I always say this about the draft is you have to take those swings. You have to believe in your guys, and you talk to NBA teams. Their boards are a lot different than consensus. They're a lot different, and some people may have had Şengün top 3. Some people may have Shaedon Sharpe top 2. Some people may have Jaden Ivey as the number 1 on their board, but they don't have that pick. So it's really team-dependent and not what we just see clicking on a few links on the internet, too.
Definitely. Well, talking about consensus, Matt, let's stay there for a second. It seems like nearly every mock draft on the internet right now, regardless of where you look, The Athletic, ESPN, SI, Bleacher Report, really since the lottery has had Jabari Smith Jr. at pick number 1 and then Chet Holmgren going to Oklahoma City at pick number 2. Let's say that 6 days from now, the pick at number 2 for the Thunder is Chet Holmgren. I know that you've watched a ton of Chet Holmgren. Mm. How do you see his fit with Oklahoma City, with Shea and Josh Giddey and the other young talent, and with the rebuild that the Thunder are going through right now?
It's a perfect fit because Chet, as weird, as strange, as foreign, different as a prospect than he is, the thing with him is it's still translatable to everything you do on the floor. Like if you draft Jabari Smith, you have a later pick in the first round, you're probably going to go get a center, right? Or build something around it. You can play Chet at the 4, play him at the 5. I'd be a little worried about him guarding guys in the post. But you can use that clock and lack of organizational pressure that Oklahoma City has because Sam Presti's had so many hits that they give him the benefit of the doubt with what he does, as it should. So that's the type of system and franchise he needs to bring him along slowly. And Sam Vecini talks about it all the time, about Chet's a guy who can grab it off the rim, go full court, push, pressure. Here's Giddey. Here's Shea on the other side. Here's a shooter in the corner. Here's Dort coming down the middle. There's a lot of different combinations that you can use with him. And that's what's so appealing to me, is that he goes to Oklahoma City. They've done this dance before. It's not like, wow, this is a foreign prospect. We don't know how to use him. They're going to find a way to do it. And it might not hit for 2 or 3 years from now.
That's an interesting point you bring up about his fit with the organization and how it may be better for him in OKC compared to some of these other other top teams who are picking in the top 3, especially after Ryan Russillo, the Ringer, comes out yesterday saying that he's heard him and his agent, Bill Duffy, would prefer OKC as an organization. I'm not sure if you've heard anything specific to that, but I just found it interesting that they kind of prefer that fit as well, because it will allow him opportunity to grow, to get playing time early. And then I think Russillo even mentioned, getting that first big contract really is a key goal for a lot of these prospects coming into the league.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just listening to that podcast. I cut off before the big contract part of it. So, but like I get it too. And he's going to be a play through his mistakes. A lot of the rookies they're on the bench because you're trying to win. We watched Golden State last night and they have Jonathan Kuminga, who I'm still a fan of, but he didn't see the floor because, yeah, it's game 6 of the finals. The margin for error is so slim. The margin for error with Oklahoma City right now is pretty wide. Who knows? I mean, they have all the picks. Do we eventually package all of them to get a vet or two? Maybe. Do we do this for 2 more drafts and say, okay, now we're all in? There's different routes that they can take. It's not like they're not trying to win, as that dog would attest to what we're saying here. But it's still like, let's do a slow and steady climb. It doesn't have to be all the way straight up from the jump.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think just on the topic of consensus as well, it seems like, there's this consensus top 3. But I know you and Sam on Game Theory have talked a lot about Jaden Ivey as well. Like, yeah. I think Sam even teased that he might have Ivey on his draft guide coming out higher than Vaccaro. So maybe of the top 4, who is your favorite fit with OKC? Is it Chet or is it one of these other prospects?
Yeah, it would be Chet. And my board's similar in that my top 4 is Chet, Jabari, Jaden Ivey, and Paolo. And people take that, obviously take it literally, but they take it as like a slight to Paolo Banchero, and I'm not trying to make it that way. Paolo Banchero is going to have a very good career. He can contribute as a rookie, he could be rookie of the year. I just believe in those other guys a little bit more to get to a place where for Jabari and Chet to be two-way players, the defense stands out more. And for Ivy, he could be a superstar just with his change of pace and his speed. As much as I love him, though, I don't necessarily like the fit on paper with Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City last year was last in the league in three-point shooting. He's noted for that burst of speed, but only a 36% shooter from college three. After freshman year, he shot 26%. Josh Giddey was 26% from three last year. Shea was 30%. Even if you run a three-guard lineup, you're asking for lots of clog lanes and zone defense. Yes, say you somehow take Jabari Smith as a shooter, right? That helps. If you take him second, Chet goes first. Then you almost need like a real shooting five to negate that lack of floor space in the backcourt if somehow you traded up and had Ivy, Shea, and Giddey. I mean, they'd have to give up an asset to get there. Like, I don't think they would take him second overall. There's been so many talks about what teams are trying to move up. Detroit, Indiana, Washington, the Knicks. A lot of teams covet Jaden Ivey. There'd have to be other pieces moved around, in my sense anyway, to make it work a little bit more cleaner with Oklahoma City.
So this has been pretty prevalent. One name other than Jaden Ivey that's been kind of rumored with OKC, of course, you know, Oklahoma City, they smoke screen a lot. I mean, you never really know who they're going to pick until they actually announce it, which is different from all the other 29 other teams. But another name that you hear other than Jaden Ivey linked to the Thunder-ish is certainly Shaedon Sharpe. What can you really tell us about Shaedon, and how do you think he really would fit with OKC's young core in comparison to what you just explained about Jaden Ivey?
So my first question is throwing it back to you guys, old podcasting trick. Did any of you think that Josh Giddey was being selected by the Thunder, or were you as surprised as everybody else?
You want a funny story real quick, Matt?
Yeah,
one of our show. One of our other co-hosts does all of our graphic design stuff. He's a freaking wizard.
Yeah.
And leading into draft night last year, he had 11 different edits of players with Thunder jerseys on for who we were taking at six, and Josh Giddey was not one of the 11.
Oh, so just on the fly, he's running a stick figure with like long hair.
We're on our live stream. He's over there like doing graphic design. Speaking of that, we had t-shirts made up, Shea Knight t-shirts for book night. Shea,
so, yeah.
So we were very surprised.
All right. Yeah, I was too. I knew he had like a secret workout out in LA, but I didn't think too much of it. Sorry to get off track. But for Shaedon Sharpe, the word and the phrase, the term you hear so much is mystery man, right? Because he hasn't played. He was at Kentucky, but like not really. Mm-hmm. He sat on the bench. He was at Kentucky as much as you and I are at Kentucky. But he has that size and positional archetype, which are the biggest sells. When you're 6'6", wide shoulders, 6'10" wingspan, you fly up and down the floor. He's just an exceptionally explosive athlete, and he can create shots. He's a beast on the break and transition. He tries to jump out of the gym. Does the three-point shot translate? That's kind of like a hang-up I have. Like when you're playing summer basketball, whether that's the EYBL or the UAA or you're playing the Adidas circuit, like that's also not necessarily the same thing as us going down and playing on a college court and shooting threes and making shots within the flow of the offense. So I think people are giving him like a little bit of the benefit of the doubt there. And I also, and this has been brought up and this will be discussed probably as like a case study years to come, he probably benefited from not paying college. He wasn't exposed. You're going off of these grainy, it's not like totally grainy, but like back gym court number five film, and you're watching, you're like, okay, is that kid good? And Nike stuff's always good who he's playing against, but it's different. Is he closer to like a BJ Boston from a year ago, who's a top five prospect, goes to Kentucky, plays, and we're like, I don't know if he's a top five guy. Exceeded expectations, right? As a rookie, he did. Probably should have been a first-round pick. That's fine. But cost himself some money. I saw somebody the other day, I think Rafael Barlow had a quote from somebody about Jaden Hardy playing with the G League Ignite. Did he expose himself by going there? Maybe. But at some point, you have to play basketball. Like, you can trick somebody in the first contract, but eventually you put on the jersey, you got to play, and it's like, oh, he's not good enough. But Shaden's team, they've kept it under wraps. I mean, there's been mixed reviews about his workouts. But teams, regardless, they're not going to fall for one workout per se. They're drawn to, like, what could that guy look like on a wing, running up and down, hitting shots, dunking on top of guys. And I can see that more with Oklahoma City. As I say, Jaden Ivey can't shoot, but a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, can be more physical, shot create differently, stronger out of mid-range. So as much as I get Ivey and would prefer Ivey just in a vacuum, I see why Shaedon Sharpe could appeal to Oklahoma City as, like, we're taking on projects. Let's take another one who if you play in Kentucky, maybe he's a top three pick. Who knows?
Staying on the Shaedon Sharpe topic for a minute, I think it's really fascinating that idea that, you know, if Jaden Hardy did the same thing, is he in the same boat? How hard is it, I guess, just for you to evaluate a guy like Shaedon Sharpe? I mean, I don't follow the high school circuit much, yeah. But from what I understand, like, he went into Peach Gym, like, ranked like 30th in his yeah. class and came out of that weekend ranked number one. And then you really don't see, I mean, I was going to say, you don't see him play competitive basketball again. I don't know how competitive Peach Gym is in comparison to playing Power Five basketball yeah. at a D1 school. How difficult is it to evaluate somebody like that when they've been number one in their class because of one really good weekend? And what are NBA teams trying to look at? I mean, we've heard the report he's playing 3-on-3 in some of these workouts.
Yeah, I just saw a quick clip of him playing 3-on-3 in Portland, and they yeah. put out a tweet, and I was like, wait, what's he doing there? Did he dive? Is that a shot? Yeah, we're trying to analyze
yeah.
the same way everybody else is nuts.
So how do you evaluate somebody like that you've never really seen as far as an NBA draft candidate? And like, what are NBA teams looking at? Like, how much stock do you put in a 3-on-3 pre-draft workout, knowing right. that you're about to pay this kid, you know, $30 million over his first 4 years and hopefully have him in your program for 9? Like, that's a massive investment for a guy that you really have no clue what the hell he looks like.
And as good as he is, right? Let's say he is a top five prospect. He hasn't really played competitive basketball in 2 years. No matter how good you are, there's going to be rust. It's going to take time. Like, rookies adjust to the NBA as it is. He, like, almost has to adjust to college while in the NBA, as crazy as it sounds. So the evaluation is difficult because he was a kid, right, like 75 to 100 was ranked. He was at Sunrise Christian Academy, didn't get much playing time, goes back to Canada, works out, transfers to Dream City Christian, I believe, has a big summer, plays well in the grind session, which is like another league played on the West Coast. But like who are you playing against? There's other Division I guys, but it's a lot different than playing at Rupp Arena with 20,000 people screaming at you. It's a lot different than playing in the G League and you turn the corner and like, oh man, here's Jalen Johnson, who was at Duke and now he's got 20 playing for the Skyhawks. It's the same thing NBA teams are doing right now. Like, how do we judge this? How do we measure this against other guys because there's more tape? And how much do you trust your gut if it's a workout, if it's an interview, whether it's intel stuff, whether you went down to Kentucky and watched them because you did practice, you did. And how much do you do that versus I have tons of tape on Ben Mathurin. I can tell you can probably shoot, a little bit worried about the defense, but I sort of know what he is. A lot of these guys like Jaden Ivey, Mathurin, Johnny Davis, they all went back to school because the freshman year didn't live up to expectations. Now they'll all be lottery picks. It scares me that Shaedon could have been lost in space and averaged 7 points per game at Kentucky and still been a consensus top 20 pick because of the tools, because you see what it could be. But it's scary. It's really scary. So as high as I have him, I think I have him fifth or sixth on my personal board. I would cop out and say, like, if I was a franchise, I would have to take a long look to take him.
Yeah,
just because of the uncertainty.
Quick aside, you mentioned that workout he had with Portland and the video highlight clip that they put out. He's playing 1-on-1 against Dalen Terry. And yeah. I love Dalen Terry. You were really high on Josh Primo last mm-hmm. year, Matt. And it can maybe higher than consensus. And then he goes, obviously, in the lottery to San Antonio, kind of a surprise. And the way that, you know, that pick was kind of analyzed, I think, by many was like almost not a draft and stash per se, but like take yeah. him a year early before right. going back to school. You can get him in your system early and develop him. Primo and Terry are obviously very different guards, very different players. I even think Terry's more of a wing, but I love the idea of taking a flyer on a guy like a Dalen Terry this draft rather than, you know, a year later, if he were to go back and kind of be the guy at Arizona. But just kind of wrapping up, I guess, the Shaedon Sharpe talk. You mentioned Ivy. You mentioned Shaedon Sharpe. It sounds like for OKC, you like the Shaedon Sharpe fit the most.
Man.
Maybe.
Back me in a corner. I would still, as I just did a Kings podcast last week, like, but what does Ivy fit? I'm like, I don't care. He's too good. You take him. Despite everything I just said, I would probably take Ivy and figure out. I think he's that much higher, and I have Shaedon Sharpe a tier below. I would understand the hesitancy on fit a little bit. The shooting would have to be figured out. I don't know if moving up the draft means moving one of your starters and creating more shooting that way too. But probably just like A to B. Yeah, Shane's a better fit there. I wouldn't pick him. So OKC, take Ivy and just make sure the pieces figure themselves out as like time rolls on here too. And I love Dalen Terry. I have him like 15th overall. He's crushed pre-draft.
Awesome.
He'll be called in the top 20. I'd be surprised if he's not.
I love it.
So obviously there's been a ton of chatter about OKC trading up. They've already given away one of the draft picks, 30th. And so OKC, best option at pick 12 if they stay there, in your opinion. But who's the guy in the top 6 or 10? Because that's really a lot of notions that OKC's maybe trying to move up. Of course, that could be leaked by other organizations, etc., because we know OKC doesn't really leak. But who's the guy at 12 if OKC is still picking there that you think would fit them well? Or who's the guy that could be in the 6 to 10 range that slides down that might be beneficial to OKC either?
Yeah, they've been active in trades. There's definitely been chatter. I mean, there's some false chatter there too. And depends sort of what happens at the top too. Because if you take, let's say Chet goes first. If you take Jabari Smith at 12-ish, do you look for a big? Do you reach for a Jalen Duren? Do you go the Mark Williams route? What keeps coming back the most is like they covet Jeremy Sochan, but they know where they are right now. It's not going to be able to happen. There's a lot of teams before them, anywhere from five down, that think that he could fit there. So they'd have to move up to get a guy like that. You also hear a lot of Usman Jang, like he's let's fully presty it up for a 6'10 funky wing that takes these weird kind of push floater shots that wasn't great the first half of the year, but it's very, very young and has played some good overseas basketball. If you're staying put and you're going full thunder and taking the full swing, I actually would look at Dalen Terry because of that culture, energy, up-tempo, the personality shows, the defense is there. Just I like to call him like a utility guy, like a Swiss Army knife. Does a little bit of everything. The shot scares me.
Yeah, he's got a weird hitch.
Yeah, it's slow. It's narrow. It's like, where are we? Just put your shoulders back. I'm no shot coach, but from everything I've gathered during this is that he showed in the interviews how committed he is to work. We saw at Arizona when Kirk Creasy got hurt that he was able to play the one and two, and he's 6'7", long arms. He anticipates. I see him wreaking havoc on an NBA floor. So we mentioned him, and then if you want to go like let's full swing it, Malachi Branham from Ohio State, I think has a real shot. I have him pretty high on my board. A freshman that averaged 20 points per game the second half of the year. King of the mid-range jumper, the three needs to improve, but is young. And based on the Keegan Murrays and Jaden Ivey's and these guys all went back to school, I kind of, not for the Thunder, but I feel similarly about Blake Wesley. Do you just do the investment now, knowing it's the domestic draft and stash, not international or pre-drafting or whatever terminology you want to use, that it's almost like getting a top seven pick a year from now, but instead we got him at 12, a la the Spurs and Josh Primo in the 2021 draft.
Every year there's a top prospect that typically falls like substantially. If you were to guess a top prospect that might fall a little bit more substantially than they were thought to, who would you maybe think that might be?
Probably a center. And that's just based on when you look at the board and actually put names to teams and you see what teams already have. Jalen Duren could fall in that spot. I think Portland's going to re-sign Nurk and they need more of a four or more of like a win now guy for Dame. Sure. I mean, that's like the natural one, but that pick fascinates me because what direction are you going with Dame Lillard? I don't know if he's going to be like, hey, we took Shaden Sharpe, who's 19, hey, hasn't played in 2 years. And Dame's like, we got to win now. Or like, I'm out of here. So Jalen Duren's my name only because of, I have him a little bit lower. I mean, he started off as like a top five guy. A lot of people have him that 5 to 10 range. But you go down the line of who's picking, and even if Mark Williams doesn't jump him, there's a real case for him to end up at 14 or 15. I mean, you look at, yes, the Knicks could take him at 11, but they need some toughness, some guard help. I don't know if the Wizards are taking him at 10. Spurs at 9, like maybe. I don't think New Orleans takes him at 8. So now all of a sudden we're at 12, 13, 14. Yeah, 13, the Hornets need a big, but we've all slotted like Mark Williams there, like it's this foregone conclusion. He's not going to go 14th to Cleveland. They have every big in the world. And then Charlotte's again at 15. So now we're talking 16, 17. Mm-hmm. You could be looking around and saying, this guy's too talented for here. I like the value of taking him at 17 versus 7. So that would probably be my name that has a chance to slide and not really anything he did. Just 10 years ago, he'd be a top five pick. We wouldn't even be having this conversation. But as the game's evolved and changed and more switching bigs, and can he do that? Maybe, right? But he didn't show a ton of it at Memphis, so there's a lot to be proven there too.
Very good. Before we move on, Matt, we're going to take a quick second to tell our listeners about who's paying the bills this week. What's up, Thunder fans? This is Jacob from the Uncontested Podcast, and I'm here to let you know that we have fully redesigned our merch store to get you the best Thunder swag available. Just visit cottonbureau.com and search the Uncontested Podcast to find all of our new designs. That's cottonbureau.com and search the Uncontested Podcast to find new drops like Josh Giddey's Wizard of Oz or an ode to the Trey Man Step Back. We've also got all the classics like Dortle Combat, Liu Tang Clan, and everyone's favorite MVP, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. The best part? You can get any design and the style of apparel you want. So if you're gearing up for the summer and want a tank top, needing a hoodie for the winter in Australia, or you're wanting a Pokemon onesie for your baby, we've got you covered. Make sure to go to cottonbureau.com and search the Uncontested Podcast to get your new Thunder gear today.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we are back. Matt, I wanted to ask you, so we were talking guys at 12, guys maybe in that trade up 6 to 10. Yeah. I'm very intrigued in that kind of bucket of wings that are kind of there. So let's exclude Shaedon Sharpe from that because we've already talked about him. You've got A.J. Griffin. You've got Ben Mathurin. You've got, I think, Johnny Davis could play on the wing a little bit, more of a guard, but could play on the wing.
Yeah, smaller, yeah.
When you look, he is smaller, but I feel like he plays big. Like,
oh, I love him. Don't sell me, yeah. But yeah, it'd be hard to if you put him on as a three, you can mask that a little bit with Giddey size and put him out there. But yeah,
with that bucket of wings kind of there in the second half, mid to late lottery, which one of those guys do you like most for Oklahoma City?
So who am I excluding here?
Just Shaden, since we've already talked about him.
Just Shaden. It depends on pick. Ben Mathurin's flying up draft boards. I don't think he'll be there at 12, but he's been in phenomenal shape during this since the season ended. Ended on a nice crescendo with the game against TCU where he was just unbelievable and had 30-something. He was dunking on people, calling for the ball, hitting threes. That's the one that probably screams the most. I wouldn't take Dyson Daniels, and I know he's not necessarily a wing, but I'd argue at his size, at 6'7", 6'8", just the foot speed defensively, you're going to probably have to push him over a little bit, and I don't know how many NBA ones he's going to guard, but too much positional overlap with Giddy with that. Like, I don't want, like, no shooting times two, no foot speed times two. You need a little bit more athleticism. AJ Griffin scares me. I mean, the jumper and the shooting is very real, but he was clunky feet and clunky defensively at Duke this last past year. The name, so what, I'm off track here. What number actual pick would this be? Because the wings kind of run out a little bit. Because, like, Keegan Murray to me is a four. Like, he's not a wing. I love Keegan. Sohan, I have at ninth. Like, not really a wing to me. Branham, smaller. Like, he's more of a guard. Dyson's kind of a wing. AJ's kind of a wing. And now we're at, like, the 15th pick. So that's why it's kind of tough to put it in a box and say who would be the next up for me.
For sure. So, yeah, I was thinking, like, Dyson, Johnny, AJ Griffin, Ben Mathurin. Like, if the Thunder were to trade up and target one of those guys, which one do you think would be the best fit?
Yeah, probably Mathurin, just for the shooting, but they might have to get up to like five. I think six or seven. He's really in play there. He's been a weird one for me. I had him at like 15th, then I moved him up to fifth, then dropped him down. He had a good tournament and all the rave reviews about him understanding his faults and what he needs to work on. But Mathurin would be likely the guy. Just add more shooting next to Shea and next to Giddy. And whether it's Chet or Jabari, let's say it's either one of them, both like 40% shooters from three. Now you have two shooters just slid into the starting lineup with the creativity of the guards that you already have.
I think it's fascinating. Ben Mathurin in NBA media availability yesterday mentioned he's only worked out for three teams.
It's funky, like the way that agents kind of control that too. It's not like, hey, we have eight teams call and I'm going to go to Oklahoma City Wednesday, Houston on Friday. And these visits for the top guys are usually longer than 24 hours too. They get there, they meet with the organization, they go out to dinner with the GM, they see the facility, they meet with strength conditioning, do the medical stuff. So it's not just like, hey, here's an hour slot. We got three guys. On the Ryan Russillo pod, they said that Jaden Ivey hadn't even been to Sacramento yet, even though he could be drafted there. I mean, there was similar stuff last season at the top of the draft about guys not going to Houston or not going to Cleveland. So it shakes itself out. I'm not totally blown away by that. I'd feel worse if it were a guy in the 20s who said, no, like we got a good indication of where he's going to go. We're only working out for 15, 16, 17. I mean, there was a prospect who said, I'm only working out for lottery teams, and he's not a lottery guy. I'm not going to say it on the air, but that's when it gets dicey. That's as an agent, yeah. I'd be like, I don't know about all that.
Same thing kind of with Jabbar. I mean, we know he's going to go top two, but he said yesterday, I'm not scheduling any more workouts. I went to Orlando. I went to Oklahoma City. I'm done.
I love that. He's good enough to do that. And if he goes to three, yeah. Like Houston will just write his name down, like put it to the commissioner. We're good.
Yeah, right.
We're taking him. He's good enough.
Very true. It is interesting, kind of the politics that kind of go into, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, it's a lot of, like, I don't want to say backroom deals, but a lot of stuff like behind the scenes and power plays and power broking and smoke screens and misdirections. And
then you think about relationships too, like certain agents have close relationships with other GMs and
that's a lot of the second round. Once you get deep in the second round, start Googling whose agent has who and who's on the roster.
Lu Dort and Wasserman, right? Like, I think there's probably a reason he didn't get selected in the second round and was signed as a unrestricted free agent after the draft with OKC. Yeah, that Wasserman connection. That's a good point.
And it depends too. Like, there's a lot of second round guys that they slide by their own choice. They're called and said, hey, well, we're Philadelphia, we'll take it 35, but it's got to be a two-year deal for the minimum. It's like, no, I'm good. I'm gonna get guaranteed money, or I'll go undrafted. I'll pick my own summer league team before I go and earn my spot. Worked out for Austin Reeves last year. It wouldn't surprise me if it works out for another guy or two this year as well.
It's a good point. So kind of, I guess, on that topic, before we play a quick rapid fire over under game before we get out of here, we're 6 days out from the draft. Thank goodness. I'm so ready for it to get here. Matt, do you have any big predictions you've kind of been sitting on? any that you want to share as we get closer to the draft? It doesn't have to be OKC related, just maybe something you've been thinking about over the past couple of days as we've gotten closer.
Yeah, it jogged me to think on it when I got kind of the sheet here, like any big predictions. Like, I haven't really thought of that. I've just thought about talking about less Chet's body type. I do think there'll be at least one trade into the lottery or up the lottery. That's my semi-bold prediction. I know it's not, because Woj was on ESPN pregame last night saying, like, number four is in play. I do see something happening there, where it's Oklahoma City moving up, whether it's Sacramento moving out, packaging some of the picks and getting out. My other one, and my predictions are all getting busted here the last day or two as the draft is getting closer, and I wish the draft could be yesterday. I look a lot smarter than I am. I know we got a green room invitation now, but Jalen Williams from Santa Clara is going to be picked in the lottery. That's my bold mistake.
I like that.
That's tough. Oh, man. So going off of like some rapid fire questions, as an over and under, you just mentioned, so like two and a half lottery picks get traded. You just mentioned, you think maybe one, two.
I would go under. I'd say one or two. I think more than two and a half, we're talking three out of what, 14 picks. That's that's a pretty big number, but I'd go under. And if I had to actually take a money line on something, I'd say two.
And so you kind of revealed that there with your last answer. And so what I'm getting to is Shaedon Sharpe, over under drafted 7.5.
I would go over, but not crazy over. Like, that's a good line. I think it would be 8, 9, 10. I don't like, if he's there 10 with Washington, they'd probably just come be like, hey, we got to do it. We got Brad Beal and a bunch of like parts, and he could be like the star. Brad Beal needs a star next to him. Although Johnny Davis is probably the safer pick, I would take Johnny Davis. But Shaedon Sharpe, the upside, the appeal, the sizzle, whatever buzzy stuff we're going to do, that's a swing. If you're at 10, that could be a top three guy. And you don't know when you're going to be there. And I talk about this with the Kings too. They're going to be there at 4, right? They haven't made the playoff in 16 years. If you're New Orleans at 8, right, they're 8. I took Sharpe on a mock draft because you don't know when that pick is. When are you ever going to have a top 10 pick again? They were in the playoffs, push the Suns to 6 games. You have this core that pushed through with CJ McCollum and Herb Jones and Brandon Ingram. And, oh, yeah, Zion Williams was injured all year. Like, if Zion is at 50%, that team is never picking 8th for the next, like, 4 or 5 years. So that's your lottery guy that you try to build around. And they're good enough without him, so you take him slow, too.
So kind of transitioning to players that are already in the league on draft night. 1.5 players who have already been deemed all or named all stars get traded on draft night. 1.5 all stars trade on draft night, over under.
Probably go under. 2 all stars feels like a lot for this draft, because it's lazily been titled like weaker because it doesn't have like the stars at the top. And I made this point last week, and unfortunately saw it at the Celtics last night. Steph Curry's unbelievable, but yeah, so is Jordan Poole. So is Klay Thompson. So is Draymond Green. For the Celtics, like, yeah, Tatum was your number one option. Didn't have a great series, but you have Jaylen Brown, you have Robert Williams. All these complementary pieces matter. And if you get the highest level guy at 1, 2, 3, 4, that's a good enough draft for me. But beyond that, now take it back, beyond those 4, I don't know how many assets I would leverage away to get into like 6, 7, 8. And use one of my all-stars to get there. If we were talking about this a year before, and we're like, man, we could get Franz Wagner plus a pick. We love Scottie Barnes. Jalen Green could be there at 3 or 4, maybe. But I don't know how many all-stars I'd put on the table for this class, unless you're getting into like the top 2 or 3.
Next over-under, Matt. 4.5 for players that you personally have in your top 30 that don't go first round.
I would probably, as I pull up my top 30, I'd probably go under. Let me see my shaky one. I really like Ryan Rollins from Toledo. I have him 25th. If you tell me he goes 37th, I wouldn't fight you over it. Christian Coloco is like probably close. I have him at the end of the first round. Christian Brown could go one way or another. I'll probably go under, but not by a crazy amount.
Staying on that topic, the reason I put that number at 4.5, I get the feeling that in this draft, and maybe you can offer some insight here, 20 to like 45 just feels like a big old bag. It's just going to be all over the place.
Yeah, it will. And I've juggled that like the last couple days too. And one of the things you guys wanted to talk about and discuss is you have that pick at 34, right? It's like, what type of swing are you taking? Are you taking the more proven guy in Christian Brown from Kansas, who I just mentioned? Do you take a Wendell Moore from Duke, who is did a little bit of everything this year for the Blue Devils and arguably probably their MVP before Paolo went nuts in the tournament, led him to the Final Four? Do you go for another Duke guy like Trevor Keels? Or is this, hey, full swing mode, we're going Josh Minot from Memphis, we're going Peyton Watson from UCLA? That's going to be team philosophy, team by team. So I totally agree with you. That's why 20 to 40 is like such a grab bag of like whatever. You put your hands in the treasure chest, you're like, I got a hacky sack, or I got a whoopee cushion. You don't know what it's going to be.
Yeah. So, and before we move on to the next over-under, that 34 pick, last year, we saw the Thunder kind of take the swings at the top with Trey Mann and Josh Giddey. And then early in the second round, they go with the higher floor, lower ceiling guy in Jeremiah Robinson Earl. Same thing very late in the draft with Aaron Wiggins. If they stick to that philosophy again, they take their swings at 2 and 12, and they go more high floor, guy that has great character, is going to fit in with the culture at 34. Can you give us like one or two names that you like at that spot, or did you already name them in guys like Christian Brown?
Those are definitely the three that I kind of had targeted, but it wouldn't surprise me just like culture, fit, toughness. There is some positional stuff with Jeremiah Robinson Earl, but like a guy like Jalen Williams from Arkansas, I could see him just being like very thundery in that respect to come in and take your charges, make some plays out of the high post, hit some trailer threes. Those guys mixed with the names I said there, potentially would make the most sense at that high. There's guys I like in the 50s and lower, but I wouldn't like go against, if like Max Christie's on the board, I think you just kind of take him and say, yeah, hey, he was a freshman at Michigan State. He could be really good. He defends better than people think, can shoot it. I'd rather take him that's a little less proven than here's something that's baked more and more of a sure thing from the immediate jump.
Very good. Taylor, you got the next over-under?
So there goes my doc. There we go. So one and a half of the guys that you have in the lottery on your big board do not go in the lottery. Kind of similar to the last question. One and a half guys on your lottery on your big board
that don't go in the lottery. Don't go in the lottery.
So guys that you were kind of talking about earlier, like a Jalen Duren potentially.
I'd say two. Probably Duren. If I end up sliding up Dalen Terry's spot, I think he'll be in the top 20-ish. But I don't know if somebody's going to go all the way up to the lottery. I have AJ Griffin 12th. I could see him sliding down a few spots too. We're giving him like a significant benefit of the doubt of last year. And if you go back and watch the film beyond that, he was really good at USA basketball. He was good at the UIBL when he played. I've watched him play in high school forever. So I'd say like 2.5, 3. What was the line?
A 1.5.
Yeah, I'll probably go over.
Okay.
Go over. Yeah.
Like it.
Let's stay in the lottery. Jeremy Sohan, drafted 9.5.
Under.
Oh, wow. No hesitation.
No hesitation there. Yeah. Even if you're not the – I really like Jeremy. I have him personally. 9th. Perfect. Great line.
Yeah, there you go.
But my spidey senses say he's going to go before 9.5.
To keep – teasing Sam's draft Bible that he's about to put out next week. But I think he said he has him 5 on Last Game Theory.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Which is good. And like I really like him. But I'm like, yo, slow down just a little bit. If he doesn't shoot, and we're all just assuming that he shoots, he's a really good defender, slasher, can pass a little bit. But if you can't shoot, like, is that guy worth a top 5 pick? If you're saying no to a Bennett Mather, and you're saying no to maybe Dyson Daniels if you're a fan of like big rangy wings, you're saying no to a guy like in Johnny Davis or who knows, Keegan Murray, if he's there, I would take those guys. And that's why I don't have him quite as high as Sam does.
That makes sense. And this is the last one.
Oof.
And you kind of hinted at this one too. So it's kind of fun to use this to put a bow on everything, but 1.5 over under of Jalen Duren and Mark Williams going the lottery. So essentially, are they both going or are they both not?
I would take the under based on the teams that are there. I think one probably goes because 14 is the Cavs, right? I think the Knicks will go with a winger guard at 11. So unless the Knicks take a big at 11, it's going to be under. I would say under. I think it'll be one, and then one will go right outside of it. I don't think it'll be this crazy slide.
Very good. Matt, before we let you out of here, last question of the day. Prediction. After Thursday night, who is on the Thunder roster? They're picking at two. We assume they're picking at 12. They might trade up. But if we had to make a guess right now, who are the we'll forget 34 because that one's really hard to predict. But let's say that the two lottery picks that the Thunder get, who's in Oklahoma City Thunder after Thursday night?
My guess, and you can timestamp this and ridicule me when it's wrong, I would say Chet Holmgren at two, and I'd say Usman Jang at 12.
Ooh, I like that.
All right. Very good. Two very long
boards. If it's traded, this is null and void. We throw out the window and say it didn't count. Okay. They move up and they Sohan seventh. Don't hold it over me.
Okay, yeah, very good. Like so that. Chet and Usman, the Thunder just...
Let's thunder it up, right? Let's thunder it up. Does it make sense? Nope, not really.
Chet, Usman Jang, and Alexei Pokushevsky on a court together.
Yes.
Put them in the same lineup.
Less than 500 pounds, I think.
That's like a fantasy football draft that makes no sense.
Just wait until Wembanyama's on the team next year.
Yeah. Throw out Victor Wembanyama, then we'll be podcasting a year from now about how Chet should play the two. You know, she's more rangy. Should be on the outside. Yeah, that's where our brains go. As soon as this draft ends, we'll do the preseason 2023 draft. Sam will be like, you ready to do this again? Like, no, dude, I got to like clear my brain for a while. I'm having dreams about podcasts and stuff. I need a break.
Awesome. Well, Matt, man, thank you so much for hopping on with us, talking some draft. I know you've got to be getting burnt out. I can't even imagine okay. We're at the precipice of it. So we really appreciate you. Everyone go check out all Matt's stuff that he does with Sam Vecenie on the Game Theory podcast. It's a must listen. Tune into their YouTube stream as well. They're making prospect breakdown videos of a lot of these first round guys. And if you watch the YouTube channel, you can see Matt digging into the Pirates' booty as well.
So, yeah, I just said something before the show. It's not a gag. It's the actual brand. But thank you for having me on, guys. I love Oklahoma City. Love you guys. Love the rest of the guys around the team, the franchise. So I'm rooting for you. Whatever that is, I'm rooting for you on Thursday night.
Awesome. We appreciate it. Well, we will be back actually later this evening, Friday night, with a call-in episode. So make sure to join us there. And then Sunday night, 9 p.m. Central Time, another podcast as we move closer and closer to the draft. We'll see if we have more rumors to break down, trade rumors. So join us then. And so you guys have a great Friday, a great weekend, and we will talk to you soon. Until then, and as always, Thunder up.